Yesterday, I took a new Yom Kippur reading. I was reading this book.
It was Tisha B'Av
night. Sorry, Tisha B'Av reading. Thank you.
Anyway,
it's a fast day.
It's still not in English.
What's that?
This book has come out in French.
It did not come out in English?
No.
It did not. It's unbelievably powerful.
Should read it
It's really... I mean, it's not so easy.
In
it's
French.
Very,
in French?
They haven't published it? Feldheim has the right... They haven't published it in... Are you sure they haven't published it in English? Are you sure?
Every time I go to the bookshop, I ask, and I'm a big bookworm.
I'm only up to page 70 in the Hebrew. Holy mackerel! It's really, really, really powerful, he's really. It's a very frightening story. Yeah. So I'll get back to Rabbi Lau. It's called Al Tishlach Yatal Anara, but it's about. I just read about his experiences from the age of 5 to the age of 8.
He was
8.
In a shana.
Yeah.
He came to speak at Encounter Point books in London.
Did he? I mean, like, the amount of times that miracles saved his life.
Unbelievable.
Is unbelievable.
His story is unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. Okay, so I will get back to him. The reason I bring this up is because, what? Harsha V'Etchanan. And the reason I wanted to Perek Vav, turn to Perek Vav in Dvarim Pasuk Dalet. Because the reason I wanted to discuss this is because we're going to deal with Rabbi Lau and something that he writes in the book in one understanding of the Shema. And I thought, since we're doing Beit Hanan, and the Shema appears in Beit Hanan, it's a really good opportunity to sit on the Shema and discuss it and study it and try to understand some of the nuances of the text and also some of the challenges and some of the deeper meanings that Chazal share with us in Shema. Perek Vav Pasuk Dalet. I mean, it's not like you don't know the words, but maybe the Rashi's you haven't seen before, and it's obviously there's Shema is bread and butter of what Jews are all about. You know, it's the first thing we teach our children, the very first thing you teach our children to say, and it's the last thing we say when in life. We say it in the morning, in the evening. So there's something about these psukim, something about this pasuk that resonates, that's supposed to draw us as Jewish people, as people of faith. So it's worthwhile, when it appears in the Torah, at least once to, spend some time studying it. So obviously we know the words, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Okay. Ve'ahavta et Hashem Elokecha, v'chol levavcha, v'chol nafshecha, v'chol me'odecha. I'll just do one more pasuk. V'ayu advarim me'ila, asher anochim etzavcha hayom al levavecha. Obviously, the most important pasuk is the first pasuk. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Does anybody know what Chazal call this? What they call, they term this pasuk? Everybody knows, right? You know what I'm talking about? Correct. It's called Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shemayim, accepting the Ol, the yoke of Malchut Shemayim upon us. And it's very important. It's actually critically important when we recite the Shema that we think about the meaning of the words and understand them. It's not enough, in the Shema especially, it's not enough to just say the words. Most times, say the words, you're close enough. Chapter 6, verse 4.
Can I ask you a question?
Chapter 6. Yeah. Sure.
I've always been told to have a mind a bit. But also, someone else told me, Rabbi, that you should put your three fingers, like a shin, and put your fingers like that. Is that like...
I've never heard that.
You've never heard that?
No.
Does it?
Okay. It's not ma'akev. No. It's... How shall I say this? Infinitely more important that you concentrate on the words that you're saying. That before you say these words, Shema Yisrael, there's actually two types of kavana a person can have. Can have, should have. Okay? One is the kavana that I'm accepting all Malchut Shemayim upon myself. And when I say these words, I'm accepting Hashem as the King of the world. And the second thing is, when you're saying it, you know the meanings of the words. It's pretty easy words. Right, so say, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. To understand that, I know what I'm saying. And that I know that I'm saying Hashem is our God, Hashem is one. And those two things are worthwhile. It's worthwhile, when you go to, when you daven with a yeshiva, for example, right, they'll say, like in davening in a shul or a minyan, they'll say, Habachem Yisrael bi'ava, they'll stop, there'll be a pause. 5, maybe even 10 seconds in the yeshiva.
Yeah.
And then they'll start the Shema. What are they doing those 10 seconds?
Refocusing.
That's right. They're concentrating. They're focusing themselves. And like, what am I going to think about when I say these words? They're very valuable seconds to say. To take the time, especially if you're davening by yourself, before you say the Shema, what am I going to focus on? Okay, so let's rip apart the words as Chazal do. Shema Yisrael. What's interesting that we say? What's interesting about that? What could it have said? Tishma'u. But even better. Right? The verb is interesting. Why does it say Shema? Look, here. Why does it say here? To listen. No. Right. Du'u Yisrael. Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Why does it say Shema Yisrael? I'm just going to point out a couple of interesting details. Okay? Shema Yisrael. Who is Yisrael? Is it B'nai Yisrael? Is it talking about Yaakov Avinu? Okay, next question. Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Okay, you have to. Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Okay. Why does it repeat? Well, I don't even know if I have an answer to this. Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. What it should it say is Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Echad. Yes.
Say Hashem twice.
Yes. Actually, I have an answer. The Midrash goes through all these questions. Finally, and this is one of my more favorite questions to discuss. This is a very deep discussion. What does it mean when we say Hashem Echad? What do we mean? Mimi, you can pull up a green chair. What do we mean when we say that Hashem is one? What does it mean that God is one? And we're gonna see, hopefully see the Rambam on Echad. But that's okay. Reach your approval. Classic.
One of the
Zayin Mamins. Okay, what do we mean when we say Hashem Echad? And do we focus on this when we say it? And maybe if I have time, I'll tie into Wired Magazine. My favorite Wired Magazine ever. Really? Yeah, well, just so.
It
okay.
Seems obvious that Hashem Echad.
It seems obvious that Hashem is one, okay? Now, you think that what it means is Hashem is our God. There is only one God. Does that make sense? Right? Hashem is one God, and He's the only God. That is not what it says.
Hashem is everything.
Right? Hashem Elokeinu. God is Hashem is our God. Hashem is one.
Hashem is because in all those, because back in the time, the whole thing is that there were all kinds of gods. The idea that our singular God is all encompassing was there was a complete antithesis of all the other religions at the time.
But I'm saying it even goes deeper than many gods versus one God. It's not a monotheistic statement, Hashem Echad. Hashem Elokeinu is a monotheistic statement. Hashem is our only God.
No?
But Elokeinu is
could be one
word. Could be.
Is our Elokeinu.
Okay. Is our God.
Elokeinu is
to the exclusion of all other gods. Doesn't it? I disagree. I think Hashem Echad is exactly the opposite. Not exactly the opposite. It takes it way far beyond that. If Hashem is our Elokeinu, Hashem is our God. By the way, you can't say He's the only God, because a lot of people worship other gods. But Hashem is our God. Right? Then what does it mean that Hashem is Echad?
That He's everything. That's quantum physics. Whatever.
I told you we get to Wired Magazine. You
no,
see?
I was going to say, but it reminds me, like, if you ask, people who are more like spiritually inclined, and you start talking to them about religion, their general thing is like, oh, well, but it's all one, like it's all the same thing, you
right?
Know? And so that it seems like that's what we're saying. Like, okay, so
it sounds New Agey, isn't it? Amazing how Moshe Rabbeinu was like New Agey before there was a New Age. You know, God is one, everyone. God right, is all one. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, there's a reason why New Age resonates with people, because it's deep truth. It's total truth.
Yeah, I agree, but I think that what they mean is that, like, you know, you're right, I'm right, we're all, you know what, I don't think Judaism.
Oh, that's what they mean. That's not true. that's not correct. Okay, let's go one more. Do one more pasuk. We'll ask a few more questions. Ve'ahavta et Hashem Elokecha, and you shall love Hashem your God, b'chol levavcha, with all your heart, u'b'chol nafshecha.
Why doesn't it say Baruch Shem?
That's not part of the pasukim. Okay, that's an important point. There's no Baruch Shem is something we add in part of the tefillah. It's from midrashic. There are midrashim about Baruch Shem that when Hashem's name is mentioned, then people say Baruch Shem, or the malachim say Baruch Shem. But it's not part of the Torah. Okay, it's a Shema and Ve'ahavta. Ve'ahavta et Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha with all your heart, b'chol nafshecha with all your nefesh, your nefesh.
Your life force.
Right. What's your spirit? Neshama. It didn't say b'chol nishmatcha, it b'chol nafshecha. Okay? U'b'chol me'odecha. Translate that. You know, this is what I love doing. What does he say? Translate. B'chol me'odecha.
With all your might.
With all your might. With all your?
Resources.
Yes? Yes, Vitalo? With all your? Midotecha. Isn't it, when you see that, when you see a phenomenon like that, that you have three translations, three different interpretations that have nothing to do with each other, you know what that means?
We
have no idea what this word means. Right? Somebody translate, what does the word ma'od mean?
A
lot. Okay, let's translate it literally. You shall love Hashem your God with all your heart, with all your life force, and with all your alat. With all your alat? With all your what?
Veriness.
With everything about you. Now, that's why we have such trouble trying to understand it. Isn't it interesting? Like, you know, this is something we say twice a day, every day, and if you think about it, we have no idea what it means. B'chol me'odecha. Resources? What was it? Life force? With all your, went to, I said life force. What do we say? What?
That's what I was
your
saying.
Your might.
Everything you have. Everything you have. Nechsa.
What does that mean? With all your nechas, right, with all your possessions, with all your property. Where is Rashi? Is that Rashi you're looking at? B'chol me'odecha, Rashi says, just look carefully, look quickly. B'chol mimoncha. Again, Rashi is struggling. What in the world does this mean? Nobody is going to tell you that me'odecha means your money.
No.
Right? It's an allusion to your money. Why? Let's read more on Rashi. Rashi explains what he's meaning. This is all from the Midrash. Yesh v'cha adam shememono chaviv alav migufo. There are some people who care more about their money than they do about their bodies. Lekach ne'emar b'chol me'odecha. That's why it says, with all your me'od, right? You should love Hashem with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your money. Why with all your money? Because some people like their money more than their lives. Between me, you and me, I've always found that Rashi troubling. It's sad.
But it is true.
Is it?
It is true.
Have you ever met somebody that bottom line cares more about their money than their own life?
Yeah, than the upkeep of their body.
Yes.
No, oh, come on. I'm not talking about...
When you were
I'm not talking about upkeep of body.
Death?
Yes, life
so,
or death.
But what about when you're living it? Like,
No, that's not the issue, because people don't keep up with their body because they think they're immortal. And they don't take... the danger,
no,
the health issues, seriously. Or lazy. Right. But we're talking about God versus money. God versus your life.
The people who commit suicide when they lose all their money.
Okay.
That happened in
2008. What?
Happened in 2008.
What?
When they lose
after
all
their money.
A lot of people didn't. I was surprised. I thought more would.
But people too.
Didn't you? Remember in the 30s, people jumping off buildings all the time.
No.
Where were all those people? You know what I'm saying? Not many people did that. I don't know. You would think that in this totally materialistic time in which we live, you would think that...
Okay,
you know,
but you're talking about like a sensational event. Like my experience was in a lot of times in New York, very, very, very wealthy people, like dripping with diamonds and cars,
yeah,
would not want to spend $75 for a nutrition session. Like to specifically...
How do you think they got to be so rich?
I don't know how they
you get rich, but
they got it from your
parents.
Right, by paying... What? By being what?
Snorers.
Oh, I thought you meant maybe they got rich because their parents are rich. Okay.
But like, so... Before, when you get to that situation where it's dire, like a Madoff situation, or God forbid, Lolling, someone is sick, then you start praying to God. But when you're just living your life, like a lot of times, it's not as important to people.
But it says, it's not talking about God or money, it's talking about money or body.
Or body, right, that's what I'm talking about.
Or it says this, and...
Ubechol me'odecha.
It's not just enough to dedicate your personal self to God. Your money, your possessions have to also be in the service of God.
So yeah, but he's saying, Rashi's saying his priorities. Mamono chavivala migufa.
So many times,
I know. Okay, anyway.
People get
you know why? How I know? You know why I don't like this? You know why I don't like this? Rashi also didn't like it. You know how I know Rashi didn't like it?
Why?
He brings another pshat. Dabar acher. He says there's another pshat. Dabar acher. Ubechol me'odecha. With all your me'od. B'chol mida u'mida shemoded lecha ben midat tova u'bein midat praniyot. What is me'odecha? It's a play on words. He doesn't think this is the pshat. Mida u'mida, with all your me'odecha, with all your midot
shemoded lecha,
that he measures you. It's measuring. Me'odecha, I guess, meaning measuring. Ben midat tova Bein midat piraniyot. Right? Whether it's a midat tova, whether it's good, or whether it's not good. Chaim b'David u'omer, kos yeshuot asa, tzara v'yagon emsa. Right? Right, that when I find that, do we see, b'chol me'odecha, with all your me'od, Rashi says, you worship Hashem with your yetzer hara, a tov only, or also with your yetzer hara? It's like a very counterintuitive statement. What does it mean to worship God with your yetzer hara?
The instinct for blood becomes a mohel, or so you take that negative, potentially negative midah, and you serve Hashem with it.
It's interesting. I think Rashi's taking it from the different side, meaning when good things happen to you, we worship Hashem. And then, would you say that's absolutely correct?
Yeah, when something wrong happens, you don't say Baruch Hashem.
Right, but that's what the Gemara says. There's a very famous mission. The Bishah says, Kishem Sheivarech Alatov, and so too a person is supposed to say, is supposed to bless God on the quote unquote Ra. The things that we think are bad are not. Halavai was, you know, we were so good at doing things like that. It's not so simple. It's simple to worship Hashem, to thank Hashem for the bad things. Okay, so just the idea, this word of that we say, B'chol me'odecha, with all your ma'od, it's. We don't really know what it means. It has a lot of different meanings. But in the simple understanding of the words, we don't really understand what it means. It means worship Hashem with all your heart, with all your soul. And what goes beyond that? What's next? Ma'od. You worship Hashem a lot? Well, if you already gave your heart and you already gave your soul, what else? Okay?
Your possession.
Okay. But it could be something else also. It doesn't say possession. It says v'chol me'odecha. Whatever that thing is for you, that's what you're supposed to use to worship Hashem. And for, if it's not your possessions, then it's something else.
It's individual.
What's that?
It depends on the person. Whatever's more harder for them.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're saying?
I think so. Or, I mean, whatever you're called upon. Okay, I've actually got sheets today. And this is a... Wow. Yeah, seriously. Don't be shocked. Look at this. Is from Sefer HaChinuch. Very interesting. Sefer HaChinuch, Mitzvah Sefer HaChinuch on the first page. Page 4, Sefer HaChinuch, Mitzvah 420. Okay. Actually, we'll start with the Rambam. Rambam says, Mahu Korei, what is Kriyat Shema? Shalosh Parshiyot, Ve'elum Hein. Shema, Vayayim Shemua, Vayomer. Umakdimin Likrot Parshat Shema, Mipnei Shiyeshba. Oh, there's two pages. I'm sorry, there's two pages.
Here, that's the second page.
My printer doesn't do double-sided. I'm on this page with the Hilchot Kriyat Shema at the top, the big Hilchot Kriyat Shema. There's five copies, so you all can... Sorry about that.
Oh, this is the full copy. One of each.
Okay. Sorry, I should have mentioned that. My mistake.
A little rusty with the hand. Mahu
Korei, Shalosh Parshiyot. What are they? They're in Shema, Vayam, Shemo, Vayomer. Umakdimin Likrot Parshat Shema. Why do we say Shema first? It has the unity of God, ve'ahavato, and loving God, ve'talmudo, and studying about God, shehu ha'ikar ha'gadol shakol talui bo. It is the main ikar, everything is dependent upon him. Meaning, this. Why is this pasuk so important? Because it has, this parsha is incredibly important because yichud Hashem, the unity of God, it has ahavato, love of God, and talmudo. Now, I think, actually, it's something important to mention. What does it mean? We don't talk about this idea of loving Hashem enough. We'll get to it in a second. But, like, we don't talk about love. Like, it's, again, one of those New Age things. You know, but if you think about it, how many times the word ahava appears in the tefillah? Ahava rabba, ve'ahabokhe be'amo Yisrael, be'ahava. I often think we don't focus enough on the love. Like, we're very good about the fear.
You haven't been to the Kaaba.
What?
You haven't been to the Kaaba.
But they have something that people want. Right?
Yeah. Torah thing.
Very into love. Right. Not so much into the fear. Yeah.
It's interesting how Hashem talks about our parents. He needs to know they're not. He doesn't know.
You don't have to love your parents.
You don't have to love them. It's interesting. He's commanding us to love him, but he doesn't command us to love our parents.
We're going
to
get to that in a second. You raised a very interesting question, which is, I don't know if you're raising it, you're...
It is supposed to be parallel, right? In order to learn to love Hashem, you're supposed to...
You're not supposed to love God.
Hashem throughout.
The fundamental question, I forgot to mention this, it's a very important question about Ve'ahavta et Hashem Elokecha, and you shall love Hashem, is... What?
What is this love?
No, that's not the fundamental question.
Why?
That's the fundamental question.
Why?
How do you command someone to love something? right? Don't you just love this coffee? Isn't it the greatest coffee ever? It is amazing, right? Except for the people who, right? don't love the coffee. Yeah, you don't have to love yourself either. Right, what is it? Meaning, right, either I love you or I don't love you. Either I love God or I don't love God.
It's the same question with the Tisha B'Av. How do you command people to be sad? How do you command people to be happy?
Now, we're not commanded to be sad on Tisha B'Av. We are not commanded to be sad. We are commanded to mourn. You can mourn by sitting on the ground, and I mean, this could be part of the answer. Correct. There's no mitzvah, there's no chiyuv to mourn. Chazal mandated certain behaviors in the hopes, and the idea, obviously, is that you would mourn. But the Torah, and what does Chazal say, and how does that manifest? What does it mean to be happy? Right. Do things that make you happy. Right. But that's also a struggle. How can we be happy? How do we get to be this idea of happiness? I struggle with that.
Can't mourn on Shabbat. You can.
You don't express outward mourning on Shabbat. Uh-huh. Right?
That's
from
being sad in your heart.
Right, you can still be sad.
I mean,
how can?
Right. That's the question. What is the Torah commanding you here? To love God. How can the Torah command you to love God? You know, what if I'm mad at God? What if I don't know God very well? You know, what does it mean that I have to love God? Okay, we'll talk about that. And there are obviously a number of different interpretations and approaches to coming to love God. Look at the Sefer HaChinuch 4:20. Misharshei HaMitzvah, the root of the commandment, Sheratza Hashem lezakot amo, sheyekablu alehem malchuto v'yichudo, b'chol yom v'alayla. He wanted to give us merit, that we should accept upon ourselves His dominion and His unity, every night, day and night, kol hayamim shehem chayim. Every day that you're alive. Why? Ki b'yot adam bal chomer. Because a person is a physical being, nifteh achar havle haolam v'nimshach leta'avotav. You just like things. You are drawn to ta'avot, desires, physical desires. So therefore, tzarich al kol panim zichron tmidi b'malchut shamayim neshamro min hachet. So you need a constant reminder to warn you off from sin. Al Ken, therefore, Hayam Mechazdo wasn't God's chesed, Lizakotenu, to give us merit, Vitzivanu Lizakhro Shte Haitima Ela Bekeva Ubekavana Gemura. And He commanded us these two times, regularly and with total intent, Achat Bayom, Lohoil Bechol Maaseinu Shebayom. Right, once during the day, in the morning. You get up in the morning, right, what's it? Okay, to what? What does it do? You wake up in the morning, first thing you do, right, Modani. You get the Shema eventually. First thing, your coffee. Yeah, okay. Okay, it's interesting. Right? What do Chazal say? Halachically, really. Right. It's lo. It says lo tochal al hadam. Right. The person should not eat. Is not permitted to eat before they daven to God. Like, how do you worship yourself before you worship Hashem? And the first thing we do is davening. And Chazal discuss, can you have a cup of coffee in the morning? Can you have a drink of water? Water you for sure could have. Right? When they get the coffee, if you add the sugar, it's a problem.
Really?
Interestingly. Yeah.
Why?
Because we have this common idea that it's just like, you know.
But if you're addicted and it's like a drug.
You have problems. Talk to her. Okay.
Talk to her about that.
Okay. When a person remembers in the morning the unity of God and His dominion, and His dominion and His capability on everything, and He puts in His heart, it's really hard, right, that God's eyes are watching everything, and all of His steps are counted. Anybody have one of those things? Like, you know, like I have in my work, the computer department has on your screen, they have the ability to take over your screen and fix your computer from there.
America.
No, not from America, from upstairs they do it. And it's like, it's simply there's an icon, what? Yeah, remote access. There's an icon in the bottom of your screen. You know what I'm saying? It's a little eye. I always feel like, you know, like the Ribbono Shel Olam is watching me, because you know, like this, yeah, that's the idea, that like, like when you get up in the morning, there's like in the bottom of your little screen, there's like a little eye. But instead of like Like, I'm always uncomfortable when it's on because, like, you don't want people to, like, watch what you're doing all the time. Just even you're not doing anything wrong, but, like, you know, check my email. What?
It's like people who have Rebbe pictures in their house and
oh. Right. Yeah, but this isn't the Rebbe. This is like, you know, the ultimate. And he really is watching. He really, really is watching. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, put a little webcam in the corner of your house. Leave it on. Like, people do this, by the way. It's all sick. Right. Leave it on. The whole world will watch you. And I always, it's so interesting when we were in Detroit. So one night, finally, like, I wanted to see Spider-Man. I got to see Spider-Man. So we went out for dinner like 8 weeks after Spider-Man came out. So we went to dinner on a Sunday night. We go to some theater, like, not really the local theater. Get to this theater. What?
On purpose? You went?
I don't know, whatever. We get to the theater. Who's sitting there? Like, four people from the other Young Israel. And I say, oh, the rabbi comes to see Spider-Man. Great. I look at me and I said, you know, it became absolutely clear that I could never do anything in Detroit without the entire community knowing about it. What?
It is.
Like Yabin Emi. Yeah, except it's your whole life all the time.
That's what they did when I went food shopping. They would look in my cart. What's the rabbi having for supper this week?
Oh, I have to tell you a story. Oh my gosh. He tells the story of the Taz in this book. The Taz was like his great-great uncle or something like that. The Taz, the guy who wrote the commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, he was a rabbi in a small town in Poland somewhere. The Taz used to learn 20 hours a day. Right? And four hours a night he would sleep. One night, it's freezing cold in the middle of the winter in God's forsaken town in Poland. And he can't sleep because he has a terrible, terrible toothache. He just can't sleep. Finally gives up. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. He decides, how can I cure the toothache? He says, I'll go to the innkeeper at the entrance of town. Because he'll give me something to drink. Maseido, give me something to drink, and maybe I'll, like, you know, you have to understand in these towns in Europe, and it's very difficult for us to understand, the Rav was revered. He wasn't like, he was like very distant. He was a Talmid Chacham, he was a Gadol, he was revered. Really just like, you know. So he trudges through the snow, goes to the, and who comes to the inn at 4 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning? Like the, what?
The drunks.
The cab drivers, you know, all different kinds of people, mostly non-Jews. And so the Rav walks into town, and the Jewish innkeeper is like, what in the world is the Rav doing in my inn at 5 o'clock in the morning? You know what I'm saying? So it was so cold, so he couldn't breathe. So he says, he indicates, can you give me something to drink? And he gives him a drink, and he takes the drink, and the alcohol soothes his toothache. And then he can talk, and he can breathe, and he explains to him, fine. He says, oh, Rabbi, I'm so happy you came. You know, it's on the house. And he said, no, I don't operate that way. Let me pay you. Just tell me how much it is. He says, it's a kopek. Fine. Of course, the Taz is the Rav of the town. Therefore, he has no money. He's, you know, poor as can be. Right? So he looks and he says, I'll owe you the money. He says, Rebbe, really, it's fine. It's on me. So I say, okay. You know, the innkeeper says, the Taz says, no, absolutely not. I'm going to write down, give me your ledger. I'm going to write down, and I owe you a kopek. So he writes down the ledger. Rav, I don't remember what his name is. Rav, whatever. All right, one kopek. Lo and behold, what do you know? The next guy comes in. He, of course, also has to write down on the ledger how much he owes. Right? So he sees the Rav of the town. Like, and of course, he goes to shul at 6 o'clock in the morning. Before you know it, the entire town knows that the Rav has been hanging out, drinking all night in the tavern. The Rashi Ha'ir find out about this, and they decide to fire him. Which they send the gabbai, of course, they don't tell him. They send the gabbai to go tell him that they've decided that they don't want to be the rabbi anymore. And he left. He left town. Try living in a fishbowl in Europe. So anyway, there's this idea that, imagine no matter what you do, if somebody was really following you, people were really, really following you, what you do all the time. Right, that's what we're supposed to have. This awareness that HaKadosh Baruch Hu really is around us all the time, and is aware of what we're doing. Lo yit'alei mimenu davar michol demarav. He doesn't miss anything. Lo yuchal hachbi mimenu achat michol mashavotav. He also knows what we think, which is really scary. Halo yiyelo lemishmar machshav tozot. Make you care. Be careful about what you think. V'hodat pi b'davar hazeh kol hayom ahu. It'll also make you careful about what you say all day long. V'yelo hodat halayla bazeh gamkein l'mishmar kol halayla. So why do we have to say Shema in the morning and the night? It's the idea. Shema, listen. Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Hashem is there. Hashem is watching you. Be aware. You know, what's the problem with this? The problem is, because we say it every day and every night, it becomes rote, right? And then we forget to think about have kavanah. This is a huge challenge. Like, if you look at the next sentence, look at the next Gemara Brachos, 13b. Tana Rabbanan. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Ad kan tzricha kavanat halev. How long do you have to have kavanah in Shema in order to be mekayim the mitzvah? He says, that pasuk. Six words. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Echad. Okay? That's not part of the pasuk. Not Baruch Shem. You just have kavanah. And by the way, if after the shi'ur you work on having kavanah in that pasuk and you're more effective in it, it'll have been so worth it. It's so powerful, so valuable. Such an important mitzvah. Of not just saying the words, but having the kavanah, having that proper focus and attention. Just about what does it mean to me to say these words? It's really, really significant and really, really important. And as the Chinuch says, really, really meaningful in our religious lives to have that kind of kavanah. Not to be poo-pooed, not to be downplayed in any way. You know, and it's hard because we do it all the time. But to see six words, if you can get over and say, if you can get to the end of the first paragraph of the Shema, how much better? But just to work on those six words of Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Yeah. Oh, for women?
Cause for women, after, like,
and, not more important than the line of Shema.
Not the line of Shema, but...
It's more important to say, right, not just have Kavanah, to say.
Women certainly have to say the first, what's that, it's a mitzvah,
no,
to say Shema
and
Grama.
Yeah. The women have to say the first line of Shema, and then from V'yatziv till the end of Shemona Esrei.
Okay. Right, but you have to have at least the first line of Shema.
Right, but not meaning that you said to have Kavana through the whole of Yahav, as Bar was saying, you don't have to say Yahav. We don't have to say Yahav. It's more important for us to say from the Yahav than to say Yahav.
Okay.
And
okay. Yeah, Shema. Also, isn't it
correct. Yeah. Correct. But from Yatziv, we mentioned Yisam, it's fine.
Right
from the Yatziv. Okay, I'm going to read you a couple more Midrashim. Let's see if I can find the one I pointed out. Okay, if you notice, if you look in Chumash, I don't know if you have it, it's very, very beautiful. Look at the first word of Shema. You'll notice. Hashem, Shema, if you look at it, I don't know if you have it in there. What do you notice? The big ayin. Look at the last word, Echad. Dalet. There's a big dalet.
Emphasize the dalet.
Well, so if you know, what do you when you put the ayin and the dalet together? What do you get?
Aid.
Right, that you're a witness, that you're a testifying to the unity of Hakadosh Baruch Hu. And the Midrash talks about this idea that there's this idea that you take to aleph, right? Then it says, "There's a 1 second. Yesh ba'olam." This is a very nice Midrash. Emtzai tachat kisei hakavod chaya sheshema Yisrael. There's this animal. There's this being. Named Israel, Yisrael. So I say, Shema Yisrael. Like, okay, Israel, the Yisrael, the thing that lives under the Kisei HaKavod. Ukeshem omim Shema Yisrael b'chol batei kneisiyot b'kol echad. When all the Jews say, Hashem Shema Yisrael, he lokacha ta'ot ayin, she takes the ayin, and then she takes the dalet of echad, umitgaberet v'osa mila ed. Ba'amda hachaya hazot v'nortenet edut, and this thing gives with testimony, and offers this sacrifice to God. Here the Bnei Yisrael, they testify, they witness the unity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Nice idea, very powerful idea. Okay, also the big Dalet, what did you say about the Dalet?
To emphasize.
How do you emphasize the Dalet?
I never got that.
Hashem Echad,
duh. People say it more like
that. That's right, this is the proof that we pronounce things improperly. Right, if you go to a Temanishul, right, the Dalid, it's a Dalid, 1 second, Hashem Echad, right? No, the. Right, you could say Hashem Echad. Interesting. Because right, otherwise, how would you be Ma'arich? How would you lengthen a Dalid? Right. So what are you going to do? That's our custom. You know, you can't do anything about it. Okay. 1 second. Let's see if I can share with you one other thing about Hashem Echad. No. Okay, let's move on. Yeah, there's a beautiful Gemara and Brachot that I wanted to share with you. Gemara says the following: Amar lahem Hakadosh Baruch Hu liYisrael. Im asituni chativa achat ba'olam. You make me, Atem, you make me chativa achat, a unique being, a unique existence in the world. Va'ani eseh chativa achat ba'olam. And I will make you chativa achat, a single entity. Atem asituni chativa achat ba'olam. You made me single, unified, as it says, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Va'ani eseh etchem chativa achat, and I will make you one chativa, as it says, Umi ke'amcha Yisrael goy echad ba'aretz. Right? Focusing on the Echad. Who is like you, Yisrael? One nation in the world. The Gemara goes even farther. The Gemara says, what does it say in our tefillin? When we wear tefillin, what's the main thing, the first parsha on the tefillin? Shema. Shema, with the shin. The Gemara says, what's in God's tefillin? The Gemara says, this pasuk is in Hashem's tefillin. Mi ke'amcha Yisrael goy echad ba'aretz. What does it mean, Hashem has tefillin? No idea. But if Hashem wears tefillin, in his tefillin is this pasuk, Mi ke'amcha Yisrael goy echad ba'aretz. Okay. Little harder one. Eliyahu is from the Yerushalmi. Eliyahu sha'al et Rabbi Nohorai. Eliyahu Anavi asked Rabbi Nohorai. Mipnei ma zivaot ba'ot le'olam. I guess this is appropriate for the day after Tisha B'Av. Why do tragedies happen in the world? Amar lo. So Rabbi Nohorai says to Eliyahu Anavi. Kach ikaro shel davar. This is the main thing. V'sha'ah she'akadosh baruch hu mabit ba'olamo. When God looks at his world, v'ro'en, he says, batei tiatrot. He sees theaters. He sees circuses. Yoshvim betach. Beautiful. Vishanan and beautiful. Ushlevim and peaceful. Ubek mikdasho charev. Right, but his Beit Midash is destroyed. Humistapel ba'afelyon alamo lachivo. So he wants to destroy the world. It's very, very, how should we say, strong indictment. Then when Israel come and they say, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Okay? And then the Malachim come in and they say, Atahu Achaloni Ba'olam, you created the world, you're the only thing in the world. Miyad noched da'ato shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu ve'eino machib olamo. And then he has calmed down and he doesn't destroy the world. So he says, really, if you think about it, like there's a tension here in the world. And I think that's it's an even stronger indictment. I read this, I identified it very strongly. It's like, when we said Tisha B'Av, I had this very, very, schizophrenic feeling. On the one hand, here I am sitting on the ground, Tisha B'Av, but I'm doing it like, you know, saying Tzion is so wonderful and I yearn for Tzion. I mean, we read the keynote and we're yearning for Tzion and Yerushalayim and we're sitting in Tzion. You want to Yerushalayim? Go to Yerushalayim. You know what I'm saying? Like, how can we mourn?
It's not that, that's not reality.
Really?
Like they
want
to give
glory
to Shalayim, and it's not like...
Who's
they? People, politicians. Sorry.
And that's not...
It's not like we're so secure, we live in... Like, everything is, like, can be taken away. And it's not perfect. I mean...
Let me ask you a really hard question. If every religious Jew said, I will no longer daven at the Kotel, I will not go to the Kotel, I will... protest every day to have the right to daven on Har Habayit or near Har Habayit, or that I won't forget Har Habayit. Now we have a Beit HaMikdash that's destroyed. Do you not think that that would have an impact and an effect? Do you not think that in some ways we ourselves have abandoned the Beit HaMikdash, happy with the Kotel? I feel that really strongly.
When people daven at the Kotel, they face the wall instead of facing the Beit HaMikdash. Like,
yes.
People are daven, they don't know what they're davening to. Like,
we are,
people think that they're davening
to the wall.
The whole Kotel has become warped, like many other things nowadays in Jerusalem. Like, you daven to the Kotel, you daven to the Kotel, you daven to Hashem.
Meaning, we're not this idea, this notion of Chorban Habayit. Like Hashem is sitting there in Chorban Habayit, and what are we doing? What are we? You know what I'm saying? You could say, well, we have to wait for Mashiach to come. Yes, but we have to. Do we yearn for the Beit HaMikdash? Do we pine for the Beit HaMikdash? The whole world thinks that there are holy places in Jerusalem, right? The Temple Mount is not the Temple Mount. It's the Al-Aqsa Mosque, and the Jews have the thing down there, and everybody should be happy. Why are you all fighting? Whose fault is that?
Ours.
I think that's our fault.
You gave a speech, that speech, the user of the good speech.
I did. I spoke about that once. And then I saw that I chickened out and didn't go up there. You know what I'm saying?
You got a free plane ticket if you would have gone.
I got it right. I also gave a speech about it, about the Harabite. And a member of mine came and said, if you go to Harabite, I'll pay for your trip there. Yeah. And he would have, but I never did. What?
I didn't do it. Did you ever go up with...
Because the Rabbani that I spoke to from Israel and respect very much are not comfortable with it. But I think that's changing.
At all? You
I think that's changing.
It was a
I
few don't years go. Ago.
It was a few years ago.
Yeah. I saw a link. I didn't read it. I think there was a link that someone put out there on Tender.
So. Tender went? Yeah. So the only thing that saves us is this Shema. Is that we keep saying Shema. And it was like, wow, the day after Tisha B'Av, I read this Midrash. It's really true. I mean, you know... We're about to open our Heichal Tarbut Yad Binyamin. Beautiful. Gorgeous. You know? What? I haven't been there. It looks nice on the outside.
It's gorgeous.
It's gorgeous.
It is gorgeous. We went to
it's very
okay.
Cool. Yeah. It's
very beautiful. Cool. And we open our own show. Beautiful. Gorgeous. We go to Harabait. There's a mosque on top of it. And we don't talk about it enough. We don't focus on it enough. It's not our priorities. Yes, we all have priorities, and but we're all guilty too. All of us.
Yesterday, the arts girl introduction to the Kingdom, yeah. Has an English paragraph that described years ago, and it's not, so it has this whole thing about how we're not emotionally
connected to Israel, and
that we have to spiritually accept again. It says, once we emotionally and spiritually accept that the Jews belong in Israel, then our bodies can also follow and go there.
Who wrote that?
The arts girl. I said to God,
what?
This is the proof of why we have Tisha B'Av. The introduction is the whole proof.
Like, meaning, because like,
read it.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just
like the whole not having the base of Middash is because I feel like rabbis or the general idea is to be afraid of building the base of Middash, that we're not allowed to do it. We're not allowed to visit there, and we're not allowed to like.
There was a long symposium. I spent a lot of time reading in Makor Rishon. They have this Shabbat insert. I spent a lot of time reading yesterday about, because some guy wrote a very provocative article saying, why are we fasting on Tisha B'Av? We have Yerushalayim. We live in Eretz Yisrael. We have secure borders. I mean, to be honest with you, this is like 90% of the Jewish idea, the dream of redemption. So what are we fasting for? And so they asked people to write in. And people wrote in very, really fascinating responses to this issue. And one of the guys wrote, because we don't really want the Beit HaMikdash yet. We create more impediments to build the Beit HaMikdash than we do ability to do it. Because if we really wanted to, we would find ways to do it. In Ezra's time, they were all Tahor? That they built the Beit HaMikdash? No, there's halachic ways to do it. There isn't a political will, there isn't a need, there isn't a feeling that we have to build the Beit HaMikdash. You know, come hell or high water, this is what we do. And between you and me, like a lot of the political problems stems from this same root. We don't have the national self-confidence to say, this is our land. Right? And we're going to defend it, we're going to fight for it. No matter what. And we're not going to surrender it, we're not going to abandon it, because we belong here. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave it to us. As soon as you say that, and you want to build a Beit HaMikdash, you don't have to give up land, you don't have to make compromises, because it all depends on your, and I've spoken about this before, your this national schizophrenia. Are we motivated by the Shema, or are we not? We don't know yet. And to be honest with you, that's supposed to be our job, that's what we're here for. We're here, our responsibility is to move this country to a place where people see that the role of Bnei Israel is the Shema. Shema Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. And it's not just blah, blah, blah. And once you answer that fundamental question, the underlying question, the deeper question, then all these other questions become easier to answer. Should we fight? Should we not fight? Should we give up this? Should we not give up that? You know what I'm saying? Should we go out of this place? Should we not? Should we build a Beit HaMikdash? Should we not? We're not ready yet. Yeah. Really? I don't know. I hate to break it to you. I don't think, of course there's infighting, but it's petty infighting. When push comes to shove, when the guys of war came out and push came to shove, you know what I'm saying? I haven't seen people say, oh, it's so bad now. Oh, it's so bad now. I think there's so much, yes, we love to fight with each other. We're really good at that. But that's only because it's not, like we're fighting about, like, you get the money for this and I get money for that. What?
Leaving
the cap on the toothpaste, right? Denominational fighting. But there's a lot of Ahavat Chinam too. When push comes to shove, like back when you read about the times of Beit HaMikdash, when push came to shove, people were killing each other. Somebody said to me yesterday, he spent the day reading Josephus. He said there were rivers of blood in Yerushalayim, not from the Romans. Jews were killing each other. Right? That's Sinat Chinam. We talk about it. We have a lot of Ahavat Yisrael. We do care about one another. We fight about how the best way to do it. We're supposed to fight. You know, I think about it also. This factionalism. Hashem designed Bnei Israel with different Shvatim. They competed with one another. Right? Competition, internal strife is sometimes good. Because you don't want everybody to always agree.
Yeah, but the army and the Jewish government took away the land from...
I say again, right? That's
there's
because...
I have that feeling, I'm not saying there's not, but that is not petty sinat.
That was not done out of sinat. You think that was done out of hatred? I think there is hatred, there is resentment. That wasn't done out of sinat, I don't think. Wow, we didn't even get to the after. How much time do I have? All right,
but
so time.
If you were from Shetim,
they have a lot of hatred. There's a lot of bitterness.
But you would feel that it was done out of hatred.
It was done out of, they honestly believed, whether right or wrong, that they were fixing a problem.
Right. I think Sharon believed right or wrong that he was fixing a problem. I think Sharon believed that.
I think if you look at the
I mean, you might not like him. Of course, there's a lot of trauma.
I don't think they believe that they were fixing a problem.
Now... You don't think they thought so?
It was loving. Have you seen them?
Everyone's going to say that I sound terrible.
Say it, because I'll probably agree with you.
The bottom line is, you know how many soldiers were being killed all the time in Gaza, and now none of them are being killed? Do you know how much
And
yes, it's terrible.
It was a war that brought the rockets closer because they knew
and
they
were
and now?
That's A and B.
And now?
What about now?
I'm not so right. I mean, you can't say this with a Midrash.
Kids are getting blown up on their way to school, and
that's
not right.
There's going to be war from that direct point when we move out.
Okay, but the bottom line is that today, kids from Gush Katif go to school, and they don't have to be on.
Have you ever gone? Did you go to Gush Katif before?
I did.
I did too. It was the scariest thing I've ever done in my life, to go to Nitzarim. You know, to get into Nitzarim, they put you in this thing called a safari. What's a safari? It's literally, what?
Like an armored...
It was basically an iron steel reinforced box.
It's scary to go to Hebron, so.
What?
It's scary to go to Hebron, so what's the
point? Okay, very good.
Wait.
Very good.
Was there more to what you were saying?
What?
Was there more to what you were saying?
It was, to get through the head of the army took you, and they put you in this box. They traveled in the box, right, on the safari. It's just a big box in the back of the truck. Then you got out, you know, after you traveled this basically 2 kilometer long road in the middle of no man's land. It was scary as heck. I mean, it was really scary. I mean,
okay, so the money that the army was spending, and then the army was spending, okay, and then it took away resources from other people. Yeah, I'm not sure if you did it right. I don't know that it was the right answer. But the bottom line is, did you have friends who had to serve in Gaza? Did your husband serve in Gaza?
Right.
Did your husband get shot at in Gaza?
Not that it's so safe.
Not that it's okay. I'm saying, my friends were soldiers, they were... It was not good to serve in Gaza.
Let's finish with...
Okay, but I think the whole point of the discussion was that...
Don't
tell
David. David, don't listen to
Yes, right.
That they didn't do it out of hatred, so fine, maybe they didn't, but how do the people who lived in Gush Katif feel? I don't think they felt, I think they felt hatred.
They felt hatred? Maybe they did. I can't answer.
How they felt,
so. I can't answer.
When you think of that other nurse,
hatred?
No,
I'm not saying, look, they're so positive. They're so, I'm so saying, but do you think that they felt that the government was taking care of them? No.
We're off course.
Yes.
Shem Echad. Look at the Rambam, the bottom. Look what you said. They had Torah.
Jumping up politics.
What?
Jumping up politics.
The way I brought it up was, I think our politics stem from these problems. Stem from our lack of a strong national Jewish identity. I think that we have to. I think that we're sometimes. Oh, I don't want to talk about politics. Yes, but we should talk about our passion as Jews. You know. We all go to work. I work in a front place. I don't know how much it helps, but do we promote?
That's it. The places where Ari works in Tel Aviv, people are so removed.
Yeah.
So, you would say a Jewish guy on his students of roots, when his husband was Catholic. Because the Catholics, in the army and I don't know what, they get like the most recognized holidays.
Really?
You don't think it was Catholic, but that's true.
So
Russia is so removed from Judaism
true. But that's what I'm saying. But that doesn't mean that doesn't mean again. As saying, I agree with you. But that means that our job is as much as we possibly can, and as we educate our children, to see our role as bringing more Ribono Shel Olam to this place. Because there is a thirst for it. There is a desire for it. There are people that are removed, but they're looking for something. And they are looking for a meaning. And deep down, I mean, Rav Kook writes about this a lot, there's a nitzot, there's a spark, there's an element that they're looking for, that level of truth that we have, that level of meaning, that connectedness to Am Yisrael and to Eretz Yisrael. And if we don't bring it to them, then how are they going to get it? What?
It's always
fine. Is there such a thing? Yisod ha-yisodot.
You know what?
Vamud ha, right? Leida is Rambam. Yisod ha-Torah, the fundamentals of the Torah. Leida, to know, sheyesh sham matsui rishon. You have to look at the Rambam writes it. He writes it in a philosophical way. There is a matsui rishon, an original presence. V'hu mamtzi kol ha-nimtza. He has made present all that is present. No, I take that back. That is not an accurate translation. V'hu mamtzi kol ha-nimtza. He continues to make present all that is present. V'chol ha-nimtza'im mishamayim u'ba'aretz u'masha b'enehem lo nimtzu'u ela ma'amitat hi matzo. Everything that exists in the world only exists because of the truth of his existence. V'im ya'aleh al hadat shehu eino matzo'i. If you would enter your mind that he is not existent, ein davar zeh echad yachol himatzo, nothing else could exist. V'im ya'aleh al hadat she'ein kol ha-nimtza'im milvado mitzuyim. Let's say you took everything in the world and removed it. Nothing exists in the world. The whole universe didn't exist. Still, he would exist. But if he didn't exist, then the universe couldn't exist. There's a lot of... It's a lot of...
His existence is not dependent on that.
What?
The first of that
example. Yes. Okay. Skip to Zion. I don't have time, obviously, to get to the whole thing. Eloha zeh, this God, echadhu. He is one. He's not two, not more than two, one. His oneness is not like the oneness in the rest of the world. It's not one, right, that combines, how many cups is this?
One
cup. Very good. But if I took this cup and I broke it down, could I? Of course you could. You could say, well, it's made of, see this? It's made of two pieces. It's made of pieces of paper. Right? And if I took these pieces of paper, I could break them down too and say, well, it's made of a bunch of fancy paper molecules. Right? I could break it down. I could continue to break it down and continue to break it down into different parts.
But you would no longer have a cup.
I wouldn't have a... Well, that's true. V'lo echad kegushu... What? But it's still divisible. V'lo echad, it's not one kegushu nechlak l'machlakot u'ketzavot. It's not a one that could be divided like ones could be divided. We are one family. I'm one person. I'm one body. But yes, it would take away my uniqueness, my identity, but it could still divide it up. Ela yichud she'en yichud acher kemoto ba'olam. It is a oneness that there is no other oneness like it in the world. Okay, let's try to wrap our hands around that, for just 1 second. God is one in such a way He encompasses everything, and He is indivisible. And there is no oneness other than God. Right? It's impossible to really wrap our heads around it because we're not supposed to. We're supposed to approach it
because
to focus
are,
on this oneness
we are
because we're physical
complex,
beings.
Right.
How do we get to Wired magazine? This is the mashal that I love. Right. Imagine on yourself like you had on your computer. There's a game called The Sims. Anybody know what The Sims are?
No,
nobody ever heard of it? No. I'm sure there's this like virtual people that you control. You can make them do stuff. You can make them happy. You can make them sad. Kind of like Chia Pets for like people. I don't know, whatever. The Sims. Yeah. So in this world, so imagine you have these people in the world and they're moving around. Okay? And they're functioning. Okay? So now imagine you could give these people self-awareness. Are these people, is the world real?
To them it is.
To them it is. Right? They're self-aware, they function in the world. Okay? Except they don't realize one important thing. What?
Somebody else
is controlling them. They have self-awareness. You're not controlling, you're letting them move around. What happens if somebody pulls a plug on the computer?
Somebody else is controlling it.
Correct. Is their world real? To them it's real. But it's only real in the sense that they're able to function within the world.
No,
that somebody is powering it.
That movie with
Truman Show.
Right. But this is even far, far deeper than that. So is our world real? Of course it's real, because the Kaddish Baruch Hu makes it real. But it's only real to us, because the Kaddish Baruch Hu continues to allow it to be real. But if you think about that, it really isn't real. It's only bits in a computer. It's only simulation. It's only energy. It's only power. No, go back to the Matrix. I don't want to sound crazy. Like people in the room. You know?
You like when you get all...
Yeah, New Agey? Right? That's the oneness of a Kaddosh Baruch Hu. He is not controlling everything, looking down. He's not moving everything, manipulating everything. He is everything. He is you. He is everything you interact with. He is the force that powers you and that gives you the ability to function. And with that in mind, we can maybe make it a very productive day. And we'll stop here. Okay.